So we're on page 1062. It's Luke chapter 22, page 1062. We're going to start at verse 24. A dispute also arose among them, their disciples, as to which of them was to be regarded as the greatest. And he said to them, "The kings of the Gentiles exercise lordship over them, and those in authority over them are called benefactors. But not so with you. Rather, let the greatest among you become as the youngest, and the leader as one who serves. For who is the greater, one who reclines at table or one who serves? Is it not the one who reclines at table? But I am among you as the one who serves. You are those who have stayed with me in my trials, and I assign to you, as my Father assigned to me, a kingdom, that you may eat and drink at my table in my kingdom, and sit on thrones judging the 12 tribes of Israel. Simon, Simon, behold, Satan demanded to have you, that he might sift you like wheat. But I have prayed for you that your faith may not fail. And when you have turned again, strengthen your brothers." Peter said to him, "Lord, I am ready to go with you both to prison and to death." Jesus said, "I tell you, Peter, the cock will not crow this day until you deny three times that you know me." And he said to them, "When I sent you out with no money bag or knapsack or sandals, did you lack anything?" They said, "Nothing." He said to them, "But now let the one who has a money bag take it, and likewise a knapsack. And let the one who has no sword sell his cloak and buy one. For I tell you that this scripture must be fulfilled in me, 'And he was numbered with the transgressors.' For what is written about me has its fulfillment." And they said, "Look, Lord, here are two swords." And he said to them, "It is enough."
Thanks, Odd. Do keep that passage open. And if you're taking notes, you'll see the insert there if you want to scribble anything down. Well, I don't know about you, but I really enjoy a gritty biography. I've got two particular favourites. The first is Bear Grylls, Mud, Sweat and Tears. You may have seen his picture up at the Scout Centre this weekend. He broke his back. The story's all about how he broke his back in a skydiving accident, and then how some months later he accomplished the feat of climbing Everest. It's very inspiring, but it's very realistic as well. So inspiring, whenever I read it, I couldn't help but think, oh, I've got to take up hiking. This is amazing. This is such an adventure. But also very realistic, because it opened my eyes as to just how tough climbing Everest would be. Not that I'm ever thinking about it. That's the first. The second is this one, Unbroken, the story of Louis Zamperini. I don't know if you've seen the film. The book's much better. He was a US athlete who became a resilient and heroic prisoner of war. Again, both inspiring and realistic. Inspiring, when I was reading it, I was like, I want to be in the Air Force, just like him. But very realistic as well, opening my eyes, giving me a dose of realism as to what that would actually look like in practice and how tough that would be. Well, this evening, this little section of Jesus' biography is both of those things. It provides us with an inspiring example to follow as we seek to follow Jesus. Copy the cross. But it also gives us a dose of realism as to just how tough that can be. Expect the cross. That's where we're going this evening. Those two points. Copy the cross and expect the cross. To fill you in on where we're up to in Luke, we're joining here halfway through a meal shared by Jesus and some of his disciples. It's Jesus. It's a somber time because it's Jesus' last ever meal with his disciples before he goes to the cross. And we saw last week how at this meal Jesus took the bread and in front of them, very symbolically, broke it and tore it apart. And how he said to them, "Do you see this bread? Well, that's like me. that's how I'm going to be treated. I'm going to be broken at the cross. And we heard last week how Jesus took the wine and we imagine him pouring it into the different glasses. And he says, do you see that wine? Well, that wine, it's like me and my blood. It's about to be poured out as I go to the cross. And he was right. At the beginning of chapter 2, had already told us that a few days previous to this, the chief priests and the scribes had also met together. The mood when they met together, though, wasn't somber. It was excited and celebratory. There was laughing and joking. They felt ecstatic. They felt as if they'd hit the jackpot. Because for ages they'd been frustrated in their attempts to kill Jesus. But now, well, one of Jesus' own friends, Judas, had joined them. And with him with them, they could only succeed. And because Jesus knows that this is going to be his last opportunity to teach his disciples, he's very, very keen to press home to them some key lessons about his death. The first we saw last week, Jesus said, my death is for you. It's instead of you. Just like the Passover lamb was killed instead of the Israelite firstborn son. So I am the new Passover lamb. I am going to be killed instead of you. I'm going to take the punishment and judgment that you deserve on myself so that you can go free. It's a swap. That's what we saw last week. But this week, Jesus is very keen to press home to us that his imminent death must two things: be an example for us to follow, copy the cross, and it must shape our expectations for how we too will be treated. Expect the cross. Well, our first point, copy the cross. Jesus says, just as I'm about to serve you by dying for you, so you must serve others. Verse 24. A dispute also arose among them as to which of them was to be regarded as the greatest. Hey, Peter, what's your healing record again? How many people did you actually manage to heal over the last few years? Did I manage to heal? You're speaking to a seasoned pro here. James chips in. Who did he ask to go up the mountain with him? Me. Who did he want by his side when he was raising that little girl from death? Me. Now, this is shocking at the best of times, but what makes this really shocking is verses 21 to 23, just beforehand. This is where the whole argument starts. Have a look at it. Jesus has just said, behold, the hand of him who betrays me is with me on the table. For the Son of Man goes as it has been determined, but woe to that man by whom he is betrayed. And they began to question one another which of them it could be who was going to do this. So do you see how shocking it was? In a matter of minutes, they go from betrayal, who, me? No. To shut up, I'm the best. It's so insensitive, it's so proud. But more than that, they're having this argument about who's the greatest in the presence of true greatness, the Son of Man, the King of the cosmos. I mean, it's just ridiculous. It's a bit like running the London Marathon, getting to the finishing line, and then seeing the Olympic gold medalist and the person who's just broken the course record, Mo Farah, in front of you, but completely blanking him. Why? Because you're having an argument with the person next to you as to which one of you came 37,424th and which one of you came 37,425th. It's ridiculous. Who cares where you rank? You're in the presence of the world's greatest. So it's ugly. It's pride. And yet when we look at them, I think we've got to say we could be just like them. Consumed with our position in the table. So how do you feel when someone introduces you as having a level of responsibility lower than you actually have? Oh, this is so-and-so. He's one of our new small group leaders. And you smile. and you think inside, I'm not a new small group leader. I've been serving for 2 years. Why do we think like that? Because the league table matters to us. How do you react when someone gets praised more than you think they deserve it? Someone says, oh, so-and-so, they're so godly and so generous. And you can't help yourself. And you say, yeah. Shame, though, about how they treated that person the other week, wasn't it? Did you hear about that? Why do we do that? Because the league table matters to us. Great to see so-and-so's friend along to church, wasn't it? Again, can't help it. It was my friend. I brought them along. And all the time we're saying, they're not great. I'm the one who's great. And the irony with it all is that we can be so concerned about our position in the league table. We don't want to come across as boastful because we know that's going to sink our position. So we kind of invent ways of communicating this information without boasting. It's quite the skill. The league table matters to us. I know I'm guilty of it. Disputing over which one of us should be regarded as the greatest. And Jesus says to them, stop it. Verse 25. He said to them, the kings of the Gentiles exercise lordship over them, and those in authority over them are called benefactors. But not so with you. Rather, let the greatest among you become as the youngest, and the leader as one who serves. For who is the greater, one who reclines at table or one who serves? Is it not the one who reclines at table? But I am among you as the one who serves. He says, you're copying the kings of the Gentiles. That's how they get on. That's how they behave. You need to copy me, the king of the cosmos. You need to copy the cross. So the kings of the Gentiles, how do they relate to those around them? Where do they stand in position and in relation to others? Well, have a look at verse 25. Because I think in verse 25 there's one word that comes up twice that pretty much sums up the kings of the Gentiles. See if you can spot it. Where do they stand in relation to others? Well, did you see the word? Over. They exercise lordship over them. They're in authority over them. Kings of the Gentiles, they're all about staying at the top of the table, talking down to people, looking down at people, expecting people to look up at them and talking up to them. I suppose the equivalent today would be the super rich and famous Roman Abramovich, worth $12.5 million. Royal families, world famous actors, musicians, that type of thing. I remember reading an article about their super yachts that many of them have and the kind of authority that these people have over their crew members. Basically, they can ask their crew anything and the answer will always be, yes sir, no problem sir. I read one account, shockingly, of when one of the boat guests really fancied a swim in the sea. But the problem was that the water was infested with jellyfish. So what happened? Well, two crew members had to jump in and create a clear swimming channel for her and then swim alongside her so that she wouldn't get stung. They got stung to bits, but she was able to have a dip. And if the TV remote isn't polished or the V in the toilet paper isn't crisp enough, well, they can lose their jobs just like that. Kings of the Gentiles exercising lordship over them. And Jesus says to his disciples, you're getting on like them, and you need to stop it. Well, how should Jesus' followers relate to those around them? What role or position should they adopt? Well, look at verse 26. What role or position should they adopt? They're to be the youngest, the servant. They're to be the crew member, actually. So who in the office gets dumped with the most boring, tedious job just around home time. It's the new grad. When there aren't enough chairs, which family member is the one who has to sit on the floor? I'll tell you from bitter experience, it's the youngest. Who's the one in the restaurant who has to clean up the kids sick? It's the waiter, the servant. In terms of league tables for greatness, status and honour, the youngest and the servant, well, they're languishing in the relegation zone. They're right at the bottom. And Jesus says, stop being like everyone else. Stop aspiring to be like Roman Abramovich. Stop trying to climb the table, fighting for position. Be like the youngest, the servant, the crew member at the bottom. Be like me. Did you see it at the end of verse 27? I am among you as the one who serves. He's speaking of the cross. His giving up his greatness, status and honour and life for the benefit of others. Stop copying the kings of the Gentiles. You need to copy the king of the cosmos. You need to copy the cross. Well, what does that mean? Well, this will probably sound really, really obvious to you, but I think it's worth saying anyway. Copying the cross doesn't mean literally carrying a cross on your back or deliberately inflicting pain on ourselves, pointlessly so. Like some people do that. That's not what's being talked about here at all. And copying the cross, it actually doesn't simply mean servant leadership. Two examples spring to my mind, very inspiring examples. The New Zealand rugby team, they've got servant leadership ingrained in the ethos of their squad. So who sweeps the mud out of the changing rooms in New Zealand at the end of training? Actually, it's the captain and the senior players. Now, that's a really good thing. It's inspiring. And I think it does capture something of what Jesus is on about here. Or another example, I think servant leadership, it's ingrained into our royal family and their ethos. So at Balmoral, when the royal family hosts the Prime Minister and his family for a barbecue, who washes up? It's not actually the servants, or even the Prime Minister, or even Prince William. It's the Queen herself. She gets rubber gloves on and gets washing the dishes, scrubbing the pans. Now these examples, they're really good things, and to be honest, if we had half of their attitude, that would be great. And what Jesus is saying here does include these things, actually it goes much, much further than that. Because copying the cross, it's not just servant leadership like those examples. It actually means serving people for their spiritual benefit. So serving other Christians, not just by making their lives easier, but by doing whatever would be best for them and their spiritual growth. Copying the cross. Or serving non-Christians, not just by being nice to them, but by doing whatever it would take, whatever the personal inconvenience, to win them for Christ. It's serving people humbly for their spiritual benefit. Copying the cross. It's actually what we've been seeing on Wednesday evenings in 1 Corinthians with Paul. That, do you remember, giving up meat to win a hearing? He's being a servant. Shutting up about his political stance or his football team to win a hearing for Jesus. And because that's how Jesus served us, giving up his life for our spiritual benefit, that's how we're to serve others as well. Well, just before we move on to our next point, just two lines in verse 28 to 30, you might want to have go away at the end and have a look at it. Jesus says, playing this role of the youngest and the servant in this way, it will actually lead to a future reversal. So for the apostles, it will mean in the future, in the new creation, they're being kings. And they're being served at Jesus' table. It'll mean reversal. But for now, copy the cross. Well, that's our first point. Second point, also related to the cross, expect the cross. In other words, if Jesus faced hostility and rejection, then Jesus' followers should also expect to face hostility and rejection. Expect the cross. We're going to come back to Peter's denial next week, but I want to just bring up one quick observation from this little paragraph. So as I read out verse 33, which is what Peter says, think about this question. What does Peter get wrong? And what does he get right? Have a look at verse 33. Peter said to him, "Lord, I am ready to go with you both to prison and to death." What did he get wrong? Well, it's the first bit, isn't it? "Lord, I am ready." He's wildly optimistic of his ability to suffer for Jesus. Far, far too much confidence in himself again. But what does he get right? Well, at least he has got right expectations of how people will try and treat him. He knows that following Jesus will mean getting treated like Jesus, prison and death. Expect the cross. And you see it in verse 35 and verse 36 as well. Have a look at this while I read it. "And he said to them, 'When I sent you out with no money bag or knapsack or sandals, did you lack anything?' They said, 'Nothing.' He said to them, 'But now let the one who has a money bag take it, and likewise a knapsack, and let the one who has no sword sell his cloak and buy one.'" Verse 35, it's referring to Luke 9. That's when Jesus sent out his apostles on a mission trip. And before going, he briefed them and he said, "Look, as you go, you don't need to bring your wallet with you. And you don't need to bring your suitcase. You won't need these things. Yeah, some people won't like you, but by and large, you're going to be well taken care of. People will show you hospitality." And that was exactly what happened. But look at verse 36. Because there are two words in verse 36 that we've got to understand if we're going to realize what being a Christian is going to be like. Two words, if we don't understand, our expectations are going to be way off. Do you see them? Two key words. "But now." Jesus says, "That was back then. But now, things have changed. Previously, you didn't need your wallet or your suitcase. People looked after you. But now, you will need them. Because whilst, yeah, some people may be on your side, by and large, most won't take care of you. People won't show you hospitality. Actually, they'll show you hostility. But now, things have changed." Why? Well, it's there in verse 37. "Because, for, I tell you that this scripture must be fulfilled in me, and he was numbered with the transgressors. For what is written about me has its fulfillment." You're going to face hostility because I am facing hostility. So what is this? How does this apply to us? Well, I think it's saying our expectation for how our Christian life is going to pan out has got to be shaped not by Jesus' early ministry, but by his late ministry and death. In other words, if you want to get right expectations, don't read the apostles' mission in Luke 9 and think that just as it was for them, people being hospitable to them, that's how it's going to be for me. No. And don't read the early part of Jesus' ministry, for example, the feeding of the 5,000, and think that following Jesus is going to make me 5,000 friends. No. That time has gone. We live now in the era of the cross. But now, things have changed. And so the question to us is, do you expect the cross? You see, in Nigeria or North Korea or Pakistan, I think most Christians would look at us funny if we were to ask them that question. They'd say, well yes, of course, we see this all the time. But here in the UK, we do need to ask this question. And I'm aware that we've just had a whole weekend on it, but we still need to keep asking this question. Because in the UK, things are really quite unusual. Some of you will have faced hostility, but many won't have, or only low-level hostility. But actually, There is a fair bit of low level, at least, hostility in the UK, even here. So I don't know if you follow this at all online. In Northern Ireland at the moment, a hard-working Christian baker is currently being sued by the so-called Equality Commission. He's being sued for a decision that actually any faithful Christian would have made in his position. That could easily be any one of us. I heard recently of a London Christian Union. They had to cancel an evangelistic event because their early friendly and persistent requests for a room to meet in, which they were entitled to, was just ignored again and again and again and again. Now, it's not in your face. It's passive aggression. One of you told me earlier about trying to set up a Christmas carol service for your workplace, getting thanks from some, but getting real grief from HR. You can't do that. You can't do that. No, not here. One of you told me recently about friends that you're trying to speak to about Jesus, being friendly, but then when you bring up the topic of Jesus and faith, they become prickly and scornful as soon as Jesus is mentioned. Now, it's low level, but it's normal. Expect hostility, not hospitality. Expect the cross, but now. But just as we finish, I'm aware that we could come away from all of this feeling racked with guilt. I'm such a failure. And so I want us just to discover one more big theme here. And really, it's the theme tune of all of these chapters. The theme tune of the disciples' failure and Jesus' atoning death for their failure. The disciples' failure. Well, I think this chapter, it's a bumper edition. I don't know about you, I sometimes like to watch... do you ever watch the epic fail videos on YouTube? I don't know what your favourite is. My favourite, the one that springs to my mind, I think it's actually from Belfast, where someone is trying to parallel park their car, reverse it into a car parking space, and they just can't do it. And they're forever turning the wheel the wrong way, and they're going in and out and in and out and back and forth. And these boys are filming it, laughing at it. It's a bit mean, but I think it's quite funny. Epic failure. It takes her about 20 minutes. Well, I think for the disciples in this passage, you could make an epic fail video for them. It's been a bumper edition. So one of them agrees to betray Jesus. All of them then argue about how great they are, causing Jesus to rebuke them. Even after that, Peter's still at it. No, I'm the best. I'm ready to follow you to prison and to death. Jesus says Peter's going to deny him 3 times. And then to top it all off, they completely misunderstand Jesus about the sword. They take it literally instead of metaphorically. And it leaves Jesus completely exasperated in verse 38. It's enough. I've had it. Not a great day at the office. But maybe that's how you feel this weekend, this past week. Maybe you feel like an epic failure. All of us will do at times. Well, if that's us, we've got to remember verse 37 again. The scripture, he was numbered with the transgressors. Because that little verse, it's not just the pattern for the Christian life, although it is. It also provides us a clue to its foundation. That little quote, well, it's a direct quote from an Old Testament song all about a servant. I want you to flick it up, actually. Just can you turn to page 743? Isaiah 53. 743, Isaiah 53. And our quote is taken from verse 12, halfway through verse 12. Speaking of the servant, He poured out his soul to death and was numbered with the transgressors. But in Isaiah's context, why is this servant being treated like a criminal? Well, look over to the page to verse 5 and you'll see why. Why is he being numbered among the transgressors? Verse 5, the servant was wounded for our transgressions and crushed for our iniquities. Upon him was the chastisement that brought us peace. So what are we saying? Make every effort to copy the cross. Be like Jesus. Pray that you might become servant-hearted like he was. And expect the cross. We've got to remember the but now. Expect hostility, not hospitality. But also remember, we're never going to be able to do this perfectly. Just like the disciples, we're going to fail at this again and again and again. So remember why Jesus went to the cross. Remember why he was numbered among the transgressors. For our transgressions, bringing us peace with God.